These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
Technology in the classroom. That's our topic today. So what do developments in technology and computers mean for today's educators? And what do technological changes to the classroom and curriculum mean for students and their families? We'll try to answer those questions and more today. Also, we'll talk about gaming and education. Yes, that's video gaming. Plus, how does online and distance learning work in Alaska, especially when you're off the road system? All that and lots more today on Kids These Days. Have you noticed many people use technology these days? From smartphones to tablets to home computers to GPS devices, it's hard to get through a day these days without interacting with some type of computer. So how are educators responding to this change in the way our kids interact with technology? And what do you think? Do you think the way kids learn while playing a video game or running an app on a tablet computer is fundamentally different than what's going on in their heads when they sit down to read a book? Well, please let us know your opinion by going to our website, kidsthesedays.org, and leaving a comment there. This show, Technology in the Classroom, is up there right now, or you can let us know what you think by commenting on our Facebook page. With me today, I'm Shanna Sheehy, are two guests. Amanda Duvall is the kindergarten through 12th grade educational technology teacher for the Anchorage School District. She supports and trains teachers on how to integrate technology into the curriculum. She's also a local representative for the Alaska Society for Technology in Education. Amanda's been an educator for 11 years in both Washington and Alaska. Thanks, Amanda, for being with us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Mark Bailey has been exploring using technology to support early childhood education for more than 25 years. After receiving his teaching license in the 70s, Mark taught young children for most of a decade before completing a doctorate in educational psychology. Dr. Bailey founded the Early Learning Community at Pacific University, where he serves as professor of education and director of the Child Learning and Development Center there. And he joins us by phone today. And Dr. Bailey, you're in Oregon, isn't that right?
I am in Oregon, just outside of Portland.
Well, great. Well, Mark, I actually wanted to start the conversation by asking you about a term that was in part of your biographical information, and that is this term, pedagogically powerful technical tools. These are things that you study and that you know about well, and I'm wondering if we can start the discussion by you explaining to all of us exactly what does that mean? What are pedagogically powerful technical tools?
Well, the idea of technological tools of all kinds is that they're designed to support learners in ways that empower them. And so the idea of a pencil or a chalkboard, those are early tools that provided capabilities to young learners. Now we have tools that allow us to do things previously unheard of. And so a technologically empowered tool is one that using a chip technology or using some kind of electronics enables children to search or to see or to record or to transcribe information that isn't otherwise possible. The idea of pedagogically powerful technological tools are those tools that empower children to learn in new ways. For example, early on in the history of education, the idea of being able to read, that was the gateway to accessing information, to finding out about new things. Mm-hmm. But with the computerized tools that we have currently, children can now access information, learn about things that interest them without necessarily having to use the interface of text and being able to read. So those kinds of tools that empower learners, that use chips, and that empower them not just to be the recipient, but the sort of the active producer of learning, those are pedagogically powerful technological tools.
So then, thank you for that explanation. And maybe we can also get a visual of what that might look like. I mean, I can kind of make some assumptions myself of what you just described and the differences between an old tool, like a book, for example, mm-hmm. and a new tool. But what, you know, give me an example of, say, a young child using one of these new tools. What would that look like to an educator or a parent?
Sure. Well, one of my favorite applications that's been around for many, many years is Dr. Seuss's ABC book. When it was originally written by Dr. Seuss, it contained a letter on each page that had interesting sounds and fun words, and a parent could sit down with an early reader and look at each page, sound out some of the pictures on each page, Aunt Annie's alligator, for example, on the A page. And the child would be able to point to those different pictures and talk about them, and it was a nice interactive activity. Well, that book is still around, and it's still possible to do that, and I think that's a wonderful activity. However, if a parent isn't there, or at the point a child would like to explore this on their own, a number of different software developers, and they've been handed down over time, it started with Broderbund Books, has created a software version of this that now runs on an iPad.
A version of this Dr. Seuss ABCs, right?
The exact same book, the same interactive, the same pictures on each page, but now they're interactive. And so a child can open that book up and press the a button that has the text as it has always been written read to them, but now on that page they can touch the different objects on the page. They will say their name, and they provide a short little humorous vignette about Aunt Annie's alligator or bees or whatever the particular picture is on the page, in a way really empowering the child to be able to search through the book themselves, to hear the sound of a bee buzzing while, you know, looking at the bee page. And so not only is it empowering them to explore on their own, but it also gives them visual and auditory information that a static book simply can't. And so the idea of a new tool, I mean, if you think about it, the idea of processing text is one of looking at abstract shapes, being able to extract from them the sort of the understanding that they form letters and that the letters represent sounds and the sounds in combination make words and the words represent a concept. Mm-hmm. So C, A, and T represent cat. However, if you look at those the C, A, and T on an iPad, for example, and you touch it and it meows, mm-hmm. that's way more concrete than the abstract representation of a book. So I would suggest that that some of these new tools have simply provided new and, in some cases, more powerful ways for children to interact with their world and learn about all sorts of things.
So what do we know then about, you know, what do we know about how this is different for the child? You just explained how the experience is different for the child, but do we know, what does research tell us, if there is research, to say how is this different inside the brain of the child? I mean, if we have all these senses happening and these things happening and connecting in different ways than if it's static on a book.
Sure. That's probably the cutting edge right now of research. And so there's a variety of research around the country looking at using, you know, functional MRIs and a variety of other tools to actually be able to scan the brain in the process of people of visualizing or reading or hearing or problem solving. And I'm not sure that we have any definite conclusions yet on if this is sort of neurologically different using a variety of tools. Mm-hmm. However, the experience to the user and the way in which it empowers them and the manner in which children can learn, I don't think is maybe fundamentally different with these tools. However, it certainly changes their empowerment, and it changes the manner in which they're able to learn in the way children learn. That is, rather than having things given to them or told to them, the sort of more typical pedagogical model of instructionism, that is, we'll provide you with things, then you can learn them, and then you can tell us back what it is you learned. Mm-hmm. This allows children to do a lot more sort of project-based, a lot more intuitive exploration. In fact, a lot more playful learning, which we know is the manner in which children learn best.
How interesting. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shannon Sheehy. That is Dr. Mark Bailey. He's on the phone with us from Oregon. And also in the studio today is Amanda Duvall. And Amanda, your work with the Anchorage School District as a technology educator, I'd like to know about what it is that you do in terms of training and helping educators incorporate technology into the curriculum they're using.
Well, I do a wide variety of things. One of my main things is that I kind of focus and take my guide from the National Education Technology Standards for teachers. Then there's also a set for students, and there's also a set for administrators. And so often I'm taking a look at those to make sure that when I'm guiding a teacher, I'm sharing with them that there are ways that people have said this is the best way to kind of guide a child through these experiences. I go in and I'll model lessons. I can coach the teacher. I might guide the teacher. I might even just come and say, hey, I happened to see that you were doing this in your classroom. I was over at such and such school and they were doing the same science kit or whatnot, and this teacher tried this. If you're interested, I'd love to help, or why don't you try it yourself? I was thinking about this the other day going, well, what is my job? And I think one of the best days was I bounced between two schools, and I started my day talking with a teacher who we were planning a session on where the kids are going to take a video, take the text out. They've been learning about the animal. They're now going to write a script on what they see happening, and they become the narrator. So we're going to use a movie program to import the movie. They will then become the narrator, and they've now shown what they learned versus the old standard, just write a report. Mm-hmm. Then I went on to work with a teacher who has his children creating an iMovie where they're looking at the concept of persuading people with media, and he and I are just consulting. He's done this project before. He and I sat down and talk. We sit down kind of every other week, check in with what they're doing. He asked me questions mostly about the program because he's got the curriculum piece. Because he's, when a teacher is uncomfortable with something, they want somebody they feel is a little more of an expert, whether I am or not. One of the biggest things I try to say is, hey, have your kids ever done it with another teacher? Because they may have introduced it another way. And that's something that's uncomfortable for a lot of teachers, that they could actually ask the child, what do you know? Do you know how to fix this, or accept an answer from a child?
And that's difficult.
That's extremely difficult. We're so used to, and it's been ingrained. And when we look back at when we were in school, the teacher was the expert. What we had was simply the book in the room, which the teacher had probably read before, and they were it. Well, now we've got this whole host of other options, and the kids can go home and they play with these things for fun. Whether they really can master them in an educational use is to be debated by many different people. But after that, then I went and taught a lesson on good elements of design. They were looking at doing presentations using a presentation tool like PowerPoint or Keynote. They're doing this presentation to talk about reflect on a science kit they just did and build their report that way. Then I went and ran down to another school for lunch and met with a group of teachers who they want their parents to know what's going on better. And so as they look at an Alaska Animals book that they build every year, each of these teachers took a section and are going to be recording pieces of it and then putting it all together in one movie so that it can be on the school's website so people can get a better concept of what the philosophy of the school is. So one class, they are each creating a slide on a child-friendly computer program allowing kids to record their voice, draw a picture, and write words. And they're going to take all those slides, put them together. Another teacher is having the kids write riddles using facts about animals, and the kids are going to ask each other the riddles. And then the other teacher is simply the class all learned about one animal. They've created different art projects. They're going to pick one, and they're going to use the computer to zoom in on different sections as the kids just relate the facts. Mm-hmm. I moved from that one to another teacher where she wants to have her kindergartners simply record the shadow plays that they've been doing. And so we were looking at touch devices because it's so much easier for a kid to take a picture on some of these touch devices than with a digital camera. The button on a digital camera can, maybe you didn't push it down hard enough.
Or you turn the camera off,
exactly.
Right?
And so these touch devices, when they can see it, it's a single button, has really taken a lot of the struggles for teachers out and has allowed us to put the child to become the photographer. Mm-hmm. And then I ended the day with a teacher who said, I've done this play over and over. The kids make marionette puppets. They're looking at a culture, civilization, time period. They've each written their script and they're now needing to put on their marionette play. But the kids struggle with how can I do the marionette and read my script? And so I'd like to take one of those out. Could we pre-record the script, play that, and then maybe we record the marionette play and we can put them together? And the kids are at that age that they're beginning to learn movie making and putting together. So we'll pull some experts from some of the older classes down because they have been doing it for a little bit longer and I've worked with them quite a bit. They're going to come work with these kids on how to create a full-fledged movie so their parents who couldn't come that day because it happened during the school day can listen to the marionette plays. And it's all going to make it easier when they do the marionette play that they can just simply do it. So my job ranges, and I bounce from teacher to teacher to school to school.
It's a project to project.
It is. It's project to project. And right now we're looking at lots of end of the year projects. And so I'm doing a lot of planning. In a couple weeks, I'll be doing a lot of hands-on. Some days I'm at one school all day with one class, maybe even just a small group. And some days I'm at three separate schools.
Well, one of the things I like so much about this topic, technology in the classroom, is that, you know, Dr. Mark Bailey, who's on the phone with us today, and you, Amanda Duvall, have just explained two, you know, very different ways of incorporating technology. In some cases, technology can be a completely different mode of teaching. And in some cases, technology is used for part of the instruction. And we have a piece prepared today that includes yet another way that technology can integrate itself with education. And it has to do with video games. When you think of video games, what do you picture? War, guns, car racing, warp zones. If you played games as a kid, think about all those hours spent on those marathon Super Mario tournaments or the hypnotizing simplicity of Space Invaders. Games have come a long way since then, but the engaging, even addictive power of video games remains the same, a power that many educators are looking to harness to use to teach math, science, and especially computer programming. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez learned more about the gamification of education.
Video games aren't just for teenage boys anymore. In fact, the average gamer is more likely to be in her mid-30s than to be a teenager. Yes, I said her. According to a recent report from the Entertainment Software Association, 82% of gamers in the United States are 18 years of age or older, and 42% of all players are women, nearly half. In fact, women over 18 are one of the industry's fastest-growing demographics. That growth is partly due to more fitness-type games, like those played on a Wii console, ongoing social networking games on Facebook, and especially the inexpensive, quick-to-download app games for smartphones. But there's also another reason that gaming overall is on the rise.
There's this a buzzword that's being used a lot that we hear at conferences everywhere called gamification. And essentially, it's taking various ideas, whether it's in the education market or anything else, and just trying to create a game out of it.
That's Jason Burnell, a software developer and notorious Alaskan wunderkind, well-known in high-tech circles for developing an app for the iPhone before the software development kit was even released. 26 years old, Burnell co-founded the Anchorage-based Catapult Consulting a year out of college. There they develop apps and video games for smartphones.
Video games essentially make your brain really, really engaged, right? When you hear something, you're not going to learn much of it, but when you're really engaged in the task and what's going on, chances are you're going to remember it much, much better. And so by getting more of your brain going and getting yourself more into it, just you learn more.
That's what university computer science programs are hoping anyway, that gamifying their first year programming courses will help to both attract and retain potential computer science majors.
My name is Kenrick Mock, and I'm an associate professor of computer science.
Dr. Kenrick Mock teaches at the University University of Alaska Anchorage, where he says it's part of his job to make computer science classes exciting to kids who've been using technology their whole lives. The demands and expectations of consumers that technology continue to move forward means that technologists must continue to innovate. Yet, despite the technologically saturated world we live in that our children are born into, computer science majors were majorly on the decline until just a couple of years ago.
And we've been trying to use that as like a motivating project. So when students start programming, the traditional program that, they've started with have been these more theoretical, mathematical, which is not boring, but might not be as relevant immediately to what the student knows about. And so we've been trying to hook them in by showing, well, you know, you come in here and you can write these games that are kind of engaging, and they get excited, and we're trying to get more students staying in computer science through that initial hook.
Using a video game to first learn programming instead of jumping right into the coding with semicolons and strings of eye-crossing letters and numbers is more engaging, easier for the beginning computer scientist to grasp. So, video games are helping to attract the next generation of computer scientists. This is an idea that universities like MIT and Carnegie Mellon know well. These schools have developed simple drag-and-drop programming tools that allow the users to essentially write a computer program while creating a video game in real time. Alice is one of these. It's a 3D computer animation environment developed at Carnegie Mellon University. It's open source, meaning anyone can download and use the software, but it's really meant for the pre-university age crowd to get them comfortable with programming before they even get to college.
Decisions about career paths are made when students are quite young.
That's Dr. Wanda Dan, the director of the Alice Project. She says exposing children to computer programming with fun and engaging tasks like animating a story or writing a video game is essential to appealing to both those younger students, but also to girls, an often underrepresented demographic in computer science departments. The idea is, if programs like Alice can reach girls at a young age before they are aware that a so-called male preference stigma exists in computing, then they are much more likely to consider a future for themselves as computer scientists.
It's not that they decide that they want to be a doctor or they want to be a mathematician at the age of 12. But it is the case that they make decisions, children make decisions about what courses they want to take in high school. Do they want to take a math class? Do they want to take the science classes? Do they want to take an introduction to programming class? And in many ways, we need to make computing an attractive kind of career at a younger age, because that's when decisions are made in terms of preparing for what comes next.
Dr. Dan and the team behind Alice have developed multiple versions of Alice, appropriate for different ages and learning levels. All of the versions have the same goal, though, to make computer programming fun, while also working to combat some of that Hollywood-propagated idea that computer programmers are nerds.
What is a nerd?
The perception of the person who is a computer scientist needs to be changed. Rather than the stereotype of the person who is not very social and sits in a corner and programs the computer all day and never gets out to see anyone else. And students need to see, and their parents need to see, that this is a career path that is very much different than the Hollywood stereotype of the geek.
Brunel, the young video game designer, has been tinkering with computers since he was a kid. He's all for this idea of teaching kids programming at a young age.
Programming is almost in some ways like the ultimate puzzle, because there's just an infinite number of ways that you can tackle a problem. And the way that you could, I think kids getting engaged in programming is really powerful, because it can be such a complicated task, but such a very logical and formulated task that's probably worthwhile for them to trying to be using that.
Dr. Dan, Dr. Mock, and Burnell all point to the reality that kids are attracted to puzzles and games. So if they spend a great amount of time playing video games anyway, why not introduce them to the idea that they can create technology instead of just consuming technology? Besides, games are here to stay.
I think games have been around for thousands of years, and all we've done is to change the context and the delivery system. I don't think they're going to go away. And I think it's really great when we can find ways to capitalize on the engagement of children with that technology in such a way as to take that time that they're spending on that as a place to, you know, learn something new.
So let's ask this again. What's a video game?
And so I'd say the core mechanics of what makes something qualify as a video game would be trying to trick your brain into having fun, trying to accomplish some task, right? So you just do some challenge, and that challenge could be anything. I mean, it could be trying to overcome some obstacle, something that your brain naturally wants to tackle.
And these days, that could be anything. I'm Sarah Gonzalez.
We will link to Alice.org and that survey about the changing demographics of gamers from our website at kidsthesedays.org. This is Kids These Days, and today I'm speaking with Amanda Duval and Dr. Mark Bailey. We're talking about technology and its use in the classroom this hour. I'm Shanna Sheehy. And Mark, I'd love in the couple minutes we have before we need to go to a break to have you maybe share any reactions you have to Sarah's piece about gaming and education.
Well, I love the piece because this idea of empowering students so that they are able to create representations of their understanding and to explore new worlds or new ideas is something that that shouldn't just be for older students, but in fact we can see occurring with the very youngest children. And so gamification is something that while it may in some places have sort of a negative stereotype, this idea of making learning fun by empowering people to enjoy what it is they're doing while they're learning is, I think, one of the fundamental principles of powerful pedagogy.
Well, thank you for that, Dr. Mark Bailey. You're tuned in to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Thanks for listening and supporting local public radio in your community. Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild, a nonprofit Alaska media organization. This program is recorded at KSKA-FM in Anchorage and distributed by the Alaska Public Radio Network. Thanks to both KSKA and APRN for their partnership and ongoing support. Still to come today, Jessica Cochran reports about technology and distance education in Alaska, and more from our guests, Amanda Duval and Dr. Mark Bailey. Stay with us for that, and we'll be right back.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Space is filled with a network of wormholes. You might emerge somewhere else in space, somewhere else in time. The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way. The cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships of the awesome machinery of nature.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust in the morning sky.
But the brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
For some teenagers, getting a license to drive is a rite of passage. But did you know more and more young people are waiting to take their driver's tests? Next time on Kids These Days, we're talking all about driving. We discuss current trends and learn about Alaska's licensing laws. We report on the red stripes on some Alaskans' licenses and find out how a tragic driving accident inspired a powerful outreach effort in Southeast. And we ask you about when you were young. What did you drive? All that and more next time on Kids These Days. This is Kids These Days. We're back, and I'm Shanna Sheehy. We're talking about technology and the classroom today, and how educators and education are changing with the times. Amanda Duvall and Dr. Mark Bailey are here talking with me about that today. And before the break, we heard a piece about gaming in education, or the gamification of education. And thank you for your response to that, Mark. I also wanted to mention something that Sarah found as well in her reporting. And she found that there's an effort at MIT that's called the Lifelong Kindergartners Lab, and that there, among other things they're doing, there's an effort to try to get young kids, like as young as three, interested in computer programming. And Mark, I wanted to ask you about that, because I think that many of our listeners probably have questions about the age of their child and how young is too young to be interacting with technology and learning from technology. And I wanted to get your comments on that.
Well, that's a really important question, and one that that researchers and educators have been pondering for quite some time. The National Association for the Education of Young Children just came out with a position statement on appropriate media use for children. And so I would encourage people to take a look at the NAEYC website, because that's a very thorough treatment of that question. Let me try and sort of distill what it is that they've come up with, and that in the research that I've done, what I found. And that is that children need to spend lots of time exploring concrete materials, exploring their worlds with their hands and with their senses. And whenever we mediate that experience through media, it is potentially more detached and problematic. But there are ways in which technology can bring the world even closer to young children. One of my favorite tools for the very youngest children is a digital microscope, something called a proscope microscope. And so in our school at the moment, we're sprouting young plants because it's springtime here in Oregon. And so children are taking these digital microscopes. And I had a student run over to me the other day, a three-year-old, and say, Mr. Mark, you have to come see this. It's a baby plant. And by using this microscope, she could hold it right next to a sprouting chia seed. And on the computer screen was this very enlarged image of what her eye couldn't otherwise see. So the way in which this tool empowered her to see things that otherwise might not be possible was not only playful and engaging for her, but completely developmentally appropriate. So when we use tools that might detach children and have them do this this idea of sitting in front of the screen by oneself and socially detached from the world, that's potentially problematic. But to pull two chairs and have three children standing at a computer working together to create a website or to design some new idea where they're playfully engaging with their peers and with the kinds of ideas that they want to construct, that's really appropriate and quite powerful.
Well, thank you for mentioning that information, and we will link to the National Association for the Education of Young Children and hopefully that report from kidsthesedays.org. And we also have with us today Amanda Duvall, and I want to ask you a little bit about this readiness and how early should technology be incorporated. But first, I want to share something that I was able to get while I was working toward this program yesterday. I happened to be sitting in a cafe next to a group of kindergarten teachers, and I was admittedly eavesdropping a little bit, and when I heard I overheard one of them talking about her smart board. I just had to jump up and ask her a question. Now, smart boards are one kind of interactive whiteboard. They're sort of like an overhead projector on steroids. They're large white displays that let teachers use a portion of a wall like a touch screen. So I had to ask, and here's one teacher's perspective on today's topic.
I'm Cindy Walsh. I teach at Taku Elementary, kindergarten.
Awesome. How long have you been a teacher, a kindergarten teacher?
25 years.
And always in kindergarten?
Mm-hmm. I taught 1 year sixth grade in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
So that's the end of my teaching career. So
when I introduced the topic and said it was technology in the classroom, mm-hmm. you know, as a longtime kindergarten teacher, what does that make you think of, first of all? First of all, that idea of technology in the classroom.
I never thought I would use as much as I do. I had an Apple IIe, you know, 20 years ago, and we kept that for a long time. And did you?
Uh-huh.
And now we have, you know, real computers. The kids use them. They know how to log in. They know how to get on the educational games.
And this is kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, they take a lot of training, but they certainly get there. And then we have a smart board, and we've had that a couple of years now, and they're amazing things to use on there, amazing tools.
And so did you have to learn new things, like new modes of teaching, in order to incorporate technology, or is it more just using the same lessons and the same ideas, but then adapting them? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, is it a totally different way of instructing, or is it just sort of an addition to your regular instruction? Instructing.
It's an addition more than anything. I don't think the technology drives my instruction so much as a tool. For, except that, you know, we're supposed to be teaching technology, of course, you know, for that it does. But yeah.
Do you think it ever gave you an opportunity to be creative in ways you might not have otherwise?
Yes. Right now, though, I just try to keep up, you know, with the changing technology, because it changes a lot. But I do think, you know, things are a lot more creative, and the kids are really good about knowing how to do things, and they are very creative. So
was it difficult to learn how to use your smart board?
Yes, I've had a couple of trainings, and I really like it. I'm still learning that, though, and it changes. And by the time I get that down, they'll go on to something else, I'm sure. So, but the kids are very, very good about it. They're very adaptable.
And does your cohort of kids, like the class that you have in any given year, would you say they come in, like, already understanding how to interact with technology? Or
most of them do.
They do.
Some of them don't. And those kids, we start training, but then the other kids who have caught on really quickly are good about showing the kids how to do it. And they're very good about teaching each other. So that's one of the things that's been really good about technology, is the kids are very good about helping. So,
mm-hmm. And then do you ever have a kid who comes in and they, like, have no idea what a touch screen is and know what a cell phone is? I mean, does that ever happen?
Oh, yes, it does occasionally. Not the cell phone so much, but, you know, you do have to train them how to use it and how to use the equipment properly so you don't break it. And, you know, so, fortunately, things are pretty kid-proof these days, but, you know, you don't want them to go after it in a bad way.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
That was Cindy Walsh, a kindergarten teacher at Anchorage's Taku Elementary School. This is Kids These Days, and I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today we're talking about technology and the classroom, and Mark Bailey from Pacific University is joining us by phone, and Amanda Duval is here from the Anchorage School District. She's a technology educator. And I saw you nodding your head a little bit there when we listened to Cindy's comments, Amanda. You know, are her experiences sort of typical, would you say, for the kindergartner teachers and maybe some other teachers that you encounter in your work?
It really depends. We have over 60 elementary schools in this district. And depending on how the school chose to spend their money, depending on if a teacher got in on a grant, there are schools that have maybe two computers in the classroom, all the way to a school that may have an interactive whiteboard. We have both Smart and Promethean in the district, to a netbook cart, which is just almost a little mini computer that only goes on the internet, to having, you know, 10 computers in the classroom. We have a huge divide between our classrooms. And it really depends on what the school's goals are, what their philosophy is, who the principal is at the time, what their funding sources are. Our legislators do a fantastic job of helping us out in this, in that we have grants that, or they can apply for legislative grants and trying to equalize that divide. But at the same time, one of the things she brought up, the whole concept of professional development, things are changing. That is one of the biggest struggles. When do you fit in time to learn new things? It's this, you know, we are asking teachers to consider coming and learning these things, but so is the math department, the science department, the social studies department. And one of the biggest things we are trying to do is integrate ourselves into the curriculum so it becomes an ubiquitous concept that you don't notice the technology. when a teacher's had it longer and longer, yes, it becomes a little easier, but you may not be able to rely on having it. Maybe you decide to go to another building and suddenly you're completely without. And so the preparation that goes into creating some of these projects can take a long time. And we often suggest, consider this year only working on math and just build your lessons for the interactive whiteboard in math. And next year, let's talk about reading. And the following year, but what if you change grades? And so more and more teachers are interested, but at the same time, we have very little planning time. We want to communicate with parents, so we want to put time into that. It's how do you spend your time and what is the way that you are most interested? And I think that is where some of our schools, the philosophy, it goes with it, and some of it doesn't, as well as teacher interest.
That's interesting. So, Amanda Duvall, you're also an Anchorage representative for the Alaska Society for Technology in Education, and I'd like you to tell us about that. What does that organization do?
Our organization each year sponsors a rather large conference, and we are in the process of trying to diversify ourselves and make that conference last a little longer. We are an affiliate of the International Society for Technology and Education and are adopting many of the things they have, special interest groups or SIGs, where you can say, I'm interested in the gaming portion or the online learning, or I'm interested in the young child's learning with technology. And then we're trying to make it so that we can provide a place that the teacher in Nome may be able to talk a little bit with the teacher in Yakutat who is corresponding with their mentor in Juneau or what, so that they can find one place to go. This is a beginning for us that we just started this past year at our conference. We have each year here in Anchorage, so the teachers can fly in, spend about 4 days doing both hands-on as well as just listening. And they are allowed to basically get ideas that they might take back to their village or may even here in Anchorage get to go. It's always a funding situation, who comes and what comes. And so we're often trying to think of, well, how can we help people to get here? And looking at next year, our focus will be on the touch devices. Mm-hmm. And every year we pick a different topic to make it so that it changes each year. The people might focus on a different thing. And it's also a place that you can come into town and try out some of these devices. We have a small vendor area that you might get to play with the, a smart board when you are in the Promethean district, because maybe you're going somewhere else, or a Mimeo is another one. There are lots and lots. And then you may also get to talk with a representative from that company and share with them, this is the trouble I'm having. Mm-hmm. And I need a little. So we try to do as much as we can just to simply support the teacher. They're the frontline educator.
Tell me something. Do you happen to know, is there any district in Alaska or districts in Alaska that have a reputation for doing really well with integrating technology into the classroom?
I think it changes every year. There are stellar teachers all over. And so it really kind of depends. Some districts are able to really support that, and they bring in specialists to do trainings. But we've got districts where you might have 3 or 4 teachers, and that's it. Well, do you really fly somebody all the way out, thousands of dollars for 3 or 4 teachers? Kind of depends. And so there are districts that do fantastic, but I don't know that we can always speak district-wide. Mm-hmm. We often have to talk about this fantastic educator at this school, because they are the ones who are really doing it. It's not so much the district.
Well, in Alaska, there are more than 140 public high schools with fewer than 20 students. So how do a small number of teachers offer all the different classes a student needs to graduate? Some think the answer lies in offering more courses online. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran has more.
Alaska's Learning Network is a coalition of all 54 Alaska school districts working together to figure out how to effectively offer online courses to students across the state. Through ACLIN, as it's called, a student could take an algebra course, for example, that's not offered in their district. This year, about 150 students are taking courses from 19 different school districts. Next year, the group hopes to offer 24 or more courses. Director Woody Wilson says one of the main goals is to make sure every student in Alaska has access to all the courses necessary to qualify for the new Alaska Performance Scholarship Program.
The scholarship for students in Alaska is extremely important. It is a carrot that students can look at, their parents can look at, and they can see that if my child takes these courses and gets good grades in these courses and then gets a good score on the ACT, the SAT, or the Work Keys exam, they can get money from the state to go to post-secondary education. They can get money for college or vocational training.
Students meet online with their teacher and fellow students once at the beginning of the year, but then complete the courses asynchronously, as their own schedules allow. Teachers post lessons and assignments and are available during virtual office hours to answer questions. All the courses are taught by Alaska-certified teachers. In this first phase, much of the curriculum has been purchased from a company called K-12, one of the nation's largest providers of online classes.
K-12 is a very reputable company across the United States. They're one of the most well-thought-of companies. Their curriculum is well thought out, well organized, and is quite rigorous.
But the longer-term plan is for Alaska teachers to develop the courses. This year, 10 teachers are learning how to do that and developing courses that can be taught through ACLIN. The program hopes to work with another 20 teachers next year. The state is also working with the university's distance learning programs to tailor some of those courses for high school students and train teachers to teach them through ACLIN. Eventually, the program envisions teachers across Alaska offering a course to students in their own district and filling up the virtual classroom with other students across the state for maximum efficiency.
For example, if a teacher had 10 students in their class and they were teaching advanced biology, they would have room for up to 20 additional students. So they would teach 20 additional students through ACLIN to students all over the state of Alaska in different schools. In return, then, the teacher's school would receive 20 seats, and those 20 seats could be exchanged for classes where their students would take classes from teachers in other school districts.
It might also be set up for districts to be paid cash per student for the students they teach from other districts. Right now, the program is paid for through a grant from the State Department of Education and Early Development. The request for next year's budget is $1.2 million. Over time, Wilson says, that number will go down as more district teachers are teaching the online courses. Distance learning isn't new to Alaska. Years ago, students and teachers mailed lessons back and forth to remote areas, and there are still some 30 correspondence schools listed on the state's website, most of them now cyber schools. But ACLIN is different in that students will stay enrolled in their home district while having the ability to take courses taught by teachers around the state. Courses offered through ACLIN will have to meet state content standards, as well as the iNICL standards set by the International Association for K-12 Online Learning. ACLIN is developing an assessment tool to make sure courses meet the requirements and plans to offer training about the standards and the tool. That way, any district that offers online courses can make sure theirs are up to standard and then offer them through ACLIN, too. One element of those mail-based correspondence schools may remain for a while. In this first year, ACLIN has found that videos and other high-bandwidth features are challenging in some remote school districts. So they plan to preload all those big files onto thumb drives and, yes, mail them out to students ahead of time.
So when they get to lesson four, and in lesson four there's a movie that they're supposed to watch, and they're supposed to watch a volcano explode or erupt, and then there's a camera later on, remote that goes down inside the cavity of the volcano and looks at things, all of that would be very intensive in terms of bandwidth. So we will have that sent to them so that they can load that on their computer and watch the same thing that the other students are watching in a live capacity. So we're trying to develop classes in such a way that the bandwidth will not be so much of a problem.
At the Consortium for Digital Learning, they're also keeping bandwidth in mind. The consortium supports districts in implementing one-to-one laptop or iPad projects and works on developing quality digital content. Director Bob Wicker says some 100 teachers enrolled in a course through the Alaska Staff Development Network are learning how to make e-books that can be accessed on laptops or iPads. The consortium is also holding an e-book contest.
So an e-book may have in it a text, of course, but then it has digital images. It may have audio files, and it may have movies. So it's very interactive. And it can have links out to other web pages where there are interactive type activities a kid could get into. Except we're really wanting these ebooks to pretty well stand alone so that it's not always needing internet access, because in some of our rural areas, the bandwidth isn't very good.
All the digital content is collected on the consortium's iTunes U site and will also be part of the state's digital sandbox repository for online education materials. Wicker says the focus is on providing high-quality lesson materials, but not whole courses.
So it's not as if students are sitting in a class with a screen in front of them all the time. It's for when that technology, whether it be a laptop or an iPad or whatever, is the most appropriate way to learn.
Wicker's group is working with other organizations to develop Alaska-specific, place-based materials. One sample ebook already up on iTunes U is about traditional Alaska Native housing. It was developed with the Alaska Native Heritage Center and old photos found through SLED, Alaska's virtual library and archives. CDL is also working to incorporate Alaska Native languages in talking book applications. So far, their work has focused on K-12 materials, but Wicker sees room for growth in early learning also. All the materials developed through these programs, whether it's whole courses or separate ebooks and lesson plans, will be available to Alaska teachers free of charge. I'm Jessica Cochran.
And we should mention that Bob Wicker and the Consortium for Digital Learning are part of the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB's Initiative for Community Engagement is also our major funder here at Kids These Days. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shannon Sheehy, and Dr. Mark Bailey and Amanda Duval are here with me today talking about the classroom and modern technology. And Mark, actually, I'd like to talk with you after that piece and ask you if you maybe have any observations about what you heard. I know it's very Alaska-specific and you're in Oregon, but do some of those things sound familiar, or you know, are you aware of any of those efforts or efforts like those?
No, absolutely. I have enjoyed listening to Amanda talk about some of the work that she's doing, and I think it really relates very nicely to what Bob Wicker just said. I'd like to focus on one of his comments, when the ebook is the most appropriate way. And it's that idea that technology should support, not supplant, other kinds of learning modalities. When it is value added, then that's really when it's the best type of tool to use. I really appreciated the points that Amanda was making about how important it is that we respect teachers' time and allow them the opportunity to explore new tools as they would explore new content. And a word that she used to describe that process is play. And it is critical that children of all ages are, and that includes adults and specifically teachers, are allowed to and encouraged to play with the materials that that they're going to be using in the classroom. The more playful their learning experience is with those learning tools, the more they will be able to, and the better they'll be able to empower their students to have those playful learning experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's when it, again, becomes a powerful experience for children.
Well, I like that you bring up that idea, too, that teachers and educators should have the ability to explore new tools and to play with them. And it gives me an opportunity to bring up a couple of fun things that we found as we were researching for this topic. So some people might be familiar with the TED Talks. So there's a new thing called TED Ed, which are videos that are about 10 minutes or less. And they're sort of made to be incorporated into teachers' existing time in the classroom, into lessons that they might already have prepared that they'd want to have a TED Ed talk be a part of, and we'll link you to that from kidsthesedays.org. And then also, I played with this last night. In fact, I went to Khan Academy, which I've been hearing a whole lot about. That's K-A-H-N Academy, which we'll link to from kidsthesedays.org as well. And, you know, I could have played there all night long and been really tired today, but I'll definitely go back. So maybe I could have Amanda, actually, because if you're familiar with those, maybe you could talk a little bit about those and how they might get incorporated into not just educators, play and way of teaching, but maybe even for caregivers, because there's some resources for them there too.
Yeah, both of those are ones that I'm familiar with. The TED Talk is one that I have used personally for professional development for years. The concept of us using technology to bring outside experts into the classroom is really one of the best ways and almost one of the easiest ways for a teacher to incorporate technology. You'd brought up smart boards earlier, and a lot of the time those are used to help guide a lesson, and inserting a quick video clip or sound file, or even maybe doing a joint experience with another classroom where you end up going on a virtual field trip. Same concept. You are having an expert that you just happen to find a video file of enter your classroom and share with the students what you can't be an expert on for everything. The Khan Academy is something that has almost been sweeping for quite a while the district, and there are fabulous things that kids can do. I have personally found it's more of a, you know, fifth, sixth grade. There are some fabulous videos and whatnot in the lower grades, but it's geared very well towards the upper grades. The creator did it for his two nephews, I believe, took the two nephews, and they wanted to watch the video over and over and over and over again, which is what kids need. They need to be able to see and go back and check and look into things, and that's something else technology does. It allows us to record what we've done. Teachers will take those interactive whiteboards. It'll record their voice as well as what's going on, and it can become a video that the kids can watch over and over. Well, Khan Academy has done that and allowed teachers to, in some cases, even flip the classroom where they are able to say, your homework tonight is watch this video. And now they come into the classroom and the student can sit down with the teacher and practice, and you get to be the real educator. And you're looking at, where are they making their mistakes? How can I help guide them? You can spend the time with the kid instead of having to take that time to maybe do the lecture or do the exploration. It's also allowing for students who need that extra practice, they can be individualized. I can say, well, I know you're doing great in multiplication, but you're a little bit further along in understanding the concept of multiplication, so I want you to watch this video on fractions and work on these advanced fraction concepts, while at the same time I've got a kiddo who came in that math is not their forte, and they are able to watch the videos and explore things on, you know, double digit addition. So in my classroom, I can start to allow students to learn at their own basic level and progress them along. It just is a second resource for teachers who are comfortable with that concept. Mm-hmm. But again, it takes that time for them to sit down, cull through the site, find what they need, and oddly, just this past week, I had a day when I had professional development at a school all day long with roving subs, and my final one was actually on Khan Academy. And we sat there, and some of the teachers were a little surprised that it wasn't like some of those traditional programs that you see that are, I get on and it tells me, okay, do this next. It takes the teacher being part of the classroom, and really that's where technology is the most helpful, is it's not there to replace the teacher.
Right.
It's there to enhance what's going on. And so these teachers were really interested in Khan Academy and still want to use it, but they were expecting a little more of a, oh, I put my kid on and I walk away because I'm trying to work on this with other kids. And the fabulous piece is it's not a replacement for the teacher.
Mm-hmm. So, and just like Mark, just like you said, it's supplement, mm-hmm. not supplant, right? Mm-hmm. I really like that, the difference there.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today. Amanda Duvall is a technology educator for the Anchorage School District and is a representative for the Alaska Society for Technology and Education. Thanks, Amanda.
No problem. It was fantastic being here.
And also, Dr. Mark Bailey. He founded the Early Learning Community at Pacific University, where he serves as a professor of education and the director of the Child Learning and Development Center there. Thanks for being on the phone with us from Oregon today.
Thank you very much, Shannon.
You can find this program and listen to it again by going to kidsthesedays.org. While you're there, you can also take a look at our KTD original blogs by Alaska dads, moms, teens, and young adults. You can also search our archive to find audio for every show we've produced to date. It's a rich resource for news and information and a way to easily connect to services offered across the state. Kids These Days is produced by Sarah Gonzalez, who is also our web content editor and business manager. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks for being with me today, and we'll see you next time.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guest, and contributors and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidsthesedays.org.